20. Come on round here, son. I got something that'll settle your stomach. As Mr. Dolphus Raymond was an evil man, I accepted his invitation reluctantly, but I followed Dill. Somehow, I didn't think Atticus would like it if we became friendly with Mr. Raymond, and I knew Aunt Alexandra wouldn't. "Here," he said, offering Dill his paper sack with straws in it. "Take a good sip. It'll quieten you." Dill sucked on the straws, smiled, and pulled at length. "Ha-ha," said Mr. Raymond, evidently taking delight in corrupting a child. "Dill, you watch out now," I warned. Dill released the straws and grinned. "Scout, it's nothing but Coca-Cola." Mr. Raymond sat up against the tree trunk. He had been lying on the grass. "You little folks won't tell on me now, will you? It'd ruin my reputation if you did." "You mean all you drink in that sack's Coca-Cola? Just plain Coca-Cola?" "Yes, ma'am," Mr. Raymond nodded. I liked his smell. It was of leather, horses, cottonseed. He wore the only English riding boots I had ever seen. "That's all I drink most of the time." "Then you just pretend you're half—" "I beg your pardon, sir." I caught myself. "I didn't mean to be—" Mr. Raymond chuckled, not at all offended, and I tried to frame a discreet question. "Why do you do like you do?" "Oh, yes, you mean why do I pretend? Well, it's very simple," he said. "Some folks don't like the way I live. Now, I could say the hell with them. I don't care if they don't like it." "I do say I don't care if they don't like it, right enough, but I don't say the hell with them. See?" Dill and I said, "No, sir." "I try to give them a reason, you see. It helps folks if they can latch on to a reason. When I come to town, which is seldom, if I weave a little and drink out of this sack, folks can say Dolphus Raymond's in the clutches of whiskey. That's why he won't change his ways. He can't help himself. That's why he lives the way he does." "That ain't honest, Mr. Raymond, making yourself out badder than you are already." "It ain't honest, but it's mighty helpful to folks. Secretly, Miss Finch, I'm not much of a drinker, but you see, they could never, never understand that I live like I do because that's the way I want to live." I had a feeling that I shouldn't be here listening to this sinful man who had mixed children and didn't care who knew it, but he was fascinating. I had never encountered a being who deliberately perpetrated fraud against himself. But why had he entrusted us with his deepest secret? I asked him why. "Because your children, and you can understand it," he said, "and because I heard that one—" He jerked his head at Dill. "Things haven't caught up with that one's instinct yet. Let him get a little older and he won't get sick and cry. Maybe things will strike him as being not quite right, say, but he won't cry. Not when he gets a few years on him." "Cry about what, Mr. Raymond?" Dill's maleness was beginning to assert itself. "Cry about the simple hell people give other people, without even thinking. Cry about the hell white people give colored folks, without even stopping to think that they're people too. Atticus says cheating a colored man's 10 times worse than cheating a white man," I muttered. "Says it's the worst thing you can do." Mr. Raymond said, "I don't reckon it's—" "Miss Jean Louise, you don't know your pa's not a run-of-the-mill man. It'll take a few years for that to sink in. You haven't seen enough of the world yet. You haven't even seen this town. But all you gotta do is step back inside the courthouse." Which reminded me that we were missing nearly all of Mr. Gilmer's cross-examination. I looked at the sun, and it was dropping fast behind the store tops on the west side of the square. Between 2 fires, I could not decide which I wanted to jump into, Mr. Raymond or the 5th Judicial Circuit Court. "Come on, Dill," I said. "You all right now?" "Yeah. Glad to have met you, Mr. Raymond. and thanks for the drink. It was mighty settling. We raced back to the courthouse, up the steps, up two flights of stairs, and edged our way along the balcony rail. Reverend Sykes had saved our seats. The courtroom was still, and again I wondered where the babies were. Judge Taylor's cigar was a brown speck in the center of his mouth. Mr. Gilmer was writing on one of the yellow pads on his table, trying to outdo the court reporter, whose hand was jerking rapidly. "Shoot," I muttered, "we missed it." Atticus was halfway through his speech to the jury. He had evidently pulled some papers from his briefcase that rested beside his chair because they were on his table. Tom Robinson was toying with them. "Absence of any corroborative evidence, this man was indicted on a capital charge and is now on trial for his life." I punched Jim. "How long's he been at it?" "He's just gone over the evidence," Jim whispered, "and we're gonna win, Scout. I don't see how we can't. He's been at it about 5 minutes. He made it as plain and easy as, well, as Ida explained it to you. You could have understood it even. Did Mr. Gilmer?" "Shh, nothing new, just the usual. Hush now." We looked down again. Atticus was speaking easily, with the kind of detachment he used when he dictated a letter. He walked slowly up and down in front of the jury, and the jury seemed to be attentive. Their heads were up, and they followed Atticus's route with what seemed to be appreciation. I guess it was because Atticus wasn't a thunderer. Atticus paused. Then he did something he didn't ordinarily do. He unhitched his watch and chain and placed them on the table, saying, "With the court's permission..." Judge Taylor nodded, and then Atticus did something I never saw him do before or since, in public or in private. He unbuttoned his vest, unbuttoned his collar, loosened his tie, and took off his coat. He never loosened a scrap of his clothing until he undressed at bedtime, and to Jim and me, this was the equivalent of him standing before a stark, naked. We exchanged horrified glances.